The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Good morning and welcome from Los Angeles. Let's see, we've got a few things going on. The Redskins have won their trademark case. Newsweek is reporting that Democrats want a socialist to lead their party more than a capitalist. Newsweek's been pushing this for quite some time, haven't they? Wasn't it Newsweek that said, we're all socialists now after Obama? Now we apparently are, well, at least from one party. There's a really tragic story of a baby in the United Kingdom sentenced to die by a court. This is a remarkable, remarkable story about what happens when the Western world starts to go dark. Also, John McEnroe, the controversy continues, except it was settled in 2013. We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America, and welcome to the program. Glad you are joining us. We're in Los Angeles this week. Had a very interesting dinner with people last night from all walks of life. Some really big entrepreneurs and Silicon Valley people, and we talked about the future. And I want to report to you today that there is a really interesting thing happening. And what it is people have changed. They're no longer talking about, how do I put this? They're more concerned than ever when it comes to what exactly is happening to our country. They are more concerned than ever about, we're going to rip each other apart. This is the first time I've heard this from leaders in Silicon Valley and in entertainment. And I thought it was a really important move and a shift in their thinking. And I heard from more than one person that they are very concerned about the hatred and the vitriol, and they are concerned about the hatred and vitriol that is coming from the left. That I found really, truly remarkable. And we'll probably talk a little bit about that later on in the program. Let's start with John McEnroe. John McEnroe caused a huge controversy. I mean, this guy's whole life. He said that Serena Williams, the best women's player in the world, would rank about 700 on the men's tour. Now, the problem with this is didn't we have this same debate with Billie Jean King? And who was the guy who
Bobby
played
Riggs.
Against Billie Jean King when we were kids?
Bobby Riggs.
Yeah, Bobby Riggs.
Yeah, he was 55 years old at the time.
Yeah. And and so this was the same thing about, you know, women are just as good as men, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm sorry, but the muscle mass alone is completely different with men. They just have more power than women. It's why, there are no women boxers that are going against men. You know, you're not going to put Mike Tyson in the ring with the strongest woman in the world, because Mike will knock her out. And John McEnroe, he doesn't need anybody to run to his defense other than the woman who is now playing the victim, Serena Williams. Listen to what she said on Letterman about herself and Andy Murray.
Well, Actually, it's funny because Andy Murray, he's been joking about myself and him playing a match. And I'm like, Andy, seriously, like, are you kidding me? Because for me, tennis and men's tennis and women's tennis are completely almost two separate sports. So I'm like, if I were to play Andy Murray, I would lose 6-0, 6-0 in 5 to 6 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. Because it's a completely different sport. The men are a lot faster, and they serve harder, they hit harder. It's just a different game. And
what?
I love to play women's tennis, and I only want to play girls because I don't want to be embarrassed. I would not do the tour. I wouldn't do Billie Jean any justice. So Andy, stop it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, how could you say that?
And how can you act like the victim when you said this on national television?
Yeah, it is weird that she's acting like the victim.
Yeah,
when she first of all. Just to add another little element to this, Glenn, that you may not know, Serena Williams and her sister Venus back in 1998 claimed that they could beat any man who wasn't in the top 200 in the world. So the man who was ranked 203rd in the world challenged him, and they played, and he played golf that morning, and then while drinking a beer between games and smoking cigarettes on the court, he beat Serena 6-1, and he beat Venus 6-2. So, I mean, it was settled with them almost 20 years ago. And then in 2013, she said that to David Letterman. I love the...
That's not 700, Pat. That's not 700.
No, that's true. Yeah. It's 203. And that's...
So let me ask you this. Why would McEnroe... I mean, McEnroe loves controversy. Mm-hmm. Why is McEnroe even bringing this up?
You know why he's bringing it up? And this is the part that everyone's missing in the story. He's bringing it up because he was being a wuss and bailing out of the actual point. He was trying so hard to compliment Serena. And John McEnroe, knowing enough a lot, obviously, about tennis, being a commentator and a longtime player, right, knows that her being 700th in the world is ridiculous. He's actually going and saying...
He's giving her the benefit of the doubt.
The benefit of the doubt. He said she's the best female player of all time. He said she might be the greatest athlete, comparatively, of all time because she has dominated her sport so incredibly. But in reality, the people who are 1,000th in the world would also beat Serena Williams easily. It's not even a knock on Serena Williams. It would be an incredible accomplishment that she'd be able to hang with these guys. We're talking about players that have dominated entire countries that are ranked 700 and 1,000th in the world. She is a great tennis player and probably the best female player of all time, though you could argue that. But when it comes to playing against men, it's just there's not a competition there.
We're supposed to pretend, though, now. We're supposed to pretend that they're exactly the same, even physically, that they have the same abilities and the same structure and the same makeup, and they can compete on an equal basis on every single playing field. And it's just not true. And we all know it's not true.
Yeah.
So why do we try to play this game?
Right. And I thought the most important thing as far as our, audience and conversation is to watch the commentators. It's the same thing we see in the media. It's the same. Like, I was watching a show on ESPN where they were talking about this. And, the only person I saw on ESPN all day who had the guts to even talk about this honestly was Will Kane, who used to work here.
Yeah.
All these commentators are going into these points that they know aren't true, and they're trying so hard to not get fired by ESPN, who fires everyone anytime they say anything mildly controversial. And they were saying things like this, and Serena Williams kind of made this point here jokingly. But they all said, oh, come on, you can't compare these two. Women's tennis is a completely different sport. No, it's not. It is not. It is tennis. They play it differently because men are capable of more things. They hit the ball harder. They are faster, as Serena pointed out herself. It is the same sport. The only reason that women's tennis exists is because women can't play as well as men. Period.
That's why all women's sports exist. That's why there's a women's basketball league.
Exactly. It's the same sport. If you wanted them all to compete against each other because they were capable of doing the same things, you just have tennis because it's the same thing. They're hitting it the same way. And it goes back to what you were talking about yesterday, Glenn. How many genders are there? All these basic questions that we all know the answers to and we all used to admit to ourselves, now we have to deny.
Wow. Listen to the oppression. Seriously, I'm dead serious. Listen to the oppression that's spilling right out of
Sue's
mouth.
I was quoting you. And by the way, how many genders are there? I don't know. Ask tennis that has men's tennis and women's tennis. They seem to understand there are two. Why don't they have 27 or 96 different divisions?
They're working on G tennis right now.
G tennis is coming?
Yes. G tennis is XI is coming.
Oh my gosh. Is that only being played by the president of China?
No. Oh. It's a different kind of G.
Oh, the gender.
Yes. The gender G.
G.
I mean, Pat, you brought this up because there's a movie coming out with Steve Carell in it as Bobby Riggs, which looks amazing.
Yeah.
Partially because they admit what actually happened, which was Riggs took it as a giant joke. He was trolling people like Andy Kaufman did. He wanted to be the villain. He liked it. He thought it was funny as a 55-year-old to come in and play.
Plus, it brought everybody a lot of money.
It
created an aura around tennis. People got interested in tennis. It was a really good thing in the early 70s.
Wasn't Philadelphia Freedom written about that?
Yeah, it was written about Billie Jean King, not necessarily the match with Bobby Riggs. But Elton John was a big Billie Jean King fan.
But people
forget that a few months before he lost to Billie Jean King, he had beaten the number one women's tennis player in the world, and he beat her severely. I mean, he crushed her. And she is the person who has the most Grand Slam wins of all time, Margaret Court. And he beat her, I think, 6-2, 6-1. It wasn't even a match. And
we all just remember the second time where he lost, didn't train, was completely out of shape.
Took it
at
not
55
seriously.
Years old. And he wasn't even the best men's player when he was playing.
Right.
I mean, it's so ridiculous.
So all the people that are wanting to abolish sex segregated sports entirely so women can compete against elite male athletes and get the recognition they deserve. I say yes.
Yeah, I fully support it. Fully support it.
I say absolutely yes. I want to see them on the football field. Mm-hmm. I want to see them on the baseball field. I want to see them absolutely everywhere. Let's just end this nonsense. There is no separation between men and women because we're all exactly the same.
And if you can't be honest about like a conversation like this about Serena Williams and admit that she, while a great player and incredibly skilled, would not be able to compete in the men's division. If you can't admit that, why aren't you supporting these divisions being combined? What the heck is wrong with you? If you think she could beat all these men, why is she playing only women? It's ridiculous. They should all be together and let them all compete fairly. There should be no WNBA. There should be no women's tennis, no women's gymnastics. Maybe the women would win all of the. You could make a serious argument that women are more flexible and can do things that men can't do in gymnastics. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe they would dominate. Maybe they would dominate synchronized swimming. Maybe they would dominate ice skating. There's a lot of things that might happen. But then let it happen. If you believe it, let it happen.
I mean. I apologize to this audience for the oppression that is happening right here.
Yesterday, you were so soft-spoken and understanding. And then look at this. We're here for 18 minutes, and look at what's happening.
I'm very understanding right now. I'm understanding what a sexist oppressor. What a white male oppressor.
Yeah, don't forget privilege.
Here's the one thing that I've really come to understand, Stu, is you can't even discuss things. As a white male? You don't have any experience except the experience of an oppressor.
Right.
I don't think that's accurate, actually.
That's what oppressors say.
Well, of course, yes.
Here's our sponsor this half hour. It is My Patriot Supply. As the world focuses on its nuclear ambitions, North Korea deploys another weapon. Drones. Yay! As Brad Thor pointed out yesterday or the day before when he was on the program, South Korea has now found a small sky blue unmanned plane perched nose up against a tree in a remote forest. This found now in South Korea is a North Korean drone. That's bad enough, but they also send satellites up in space. Brad said, you know, all you have to do is put a small nuke, which is what they are trying to do now and have made. You just put that in a satellite as soon as it gets over the United States. One small nuke at that atmosphere would or that height in the atmosphere would knock all of our electricity out and fry all of the circuits in America. So that's good news. But don't worry, everything is good. My Patriot Supply has 102 servings of survival food. It is breakfast, lunch, dinner, servings that are less than a dollar per serving. You can go to preparewithglenn.com or call 1-800-200-7163. 1-800-200-7163. Preparewithglenn.com. They have the 102 servings for less than a dollar per serving, but they also have things like backpacks or, you know, get your 72-hour kit. Get started now. Preparewithglenn.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. So glad that you're here today. It is Thursday. I want to thank our people here in Los Angeles who are working hard to keep us up. Nathan is working hard all week here in our studios in Los Angeles, and we sure appreciate it. Newsweek magazine is doing a story now about how the Democrats want a socialist to lead their party more than a capitalist. This is amazing. I will tell you that I had dinner last night with a bunch of people who are, you know, very liberal California, Silicon Valley kind of people. Some of them were libertarians. But the people that I talked to, last night, liked Bernie Sanders for the one reason that he at least was honest, for the same reason that I felt, that Bernie Sanders was a good candidate for the Democrats. At least the Democrats would have to face, are we socialist or not? However, many of the people I talked to last night were afraid of the extreme left and afraid of the people that the Democratic Party were really turning to and turning into. And they were hoping for a Macron kind of solution, that somebody from the middle would show up. As I was talking to them, I thought, who do you have that's in the middle? I mean,
no
your,
one.
Your party has opened up this can of worms that has let all of these Marxists in, and your universities are teaching nothing but Marxism and redistribution of wealth. Who do you think you're going to get? It's really bizarre, the position that we are in on both sides in this country.
Did you actually ask them that? Did you ask them that, or were you just thinking that?
What'd you say?
Did you ask them, or were you just thinking that to yourself? Like, who are you going to, is there anybody?
I think I asked the room that. I don't think I got it. Michelle, did I ask that? Matthew, I did? Yeah, and I don't think I got anything but a general answer. They were one guy in particular who was the leader of this group, and had invited everybody for dinner. He was very clear that he was he's a Jewish guy, and he said, you know, I am afraid of the ultra right. He said, but history shows that it's the uber left that usually rounds the Jews up.
Thank you.
And yes, that was shocking coming from him. Really shocking. They've changed. I met them about a year ago. Not all of these people, but some of these people about a year ago. And they have really, truly changed. Really changed. They're very concerned about the loss of news credibility and wanted to know, you know, how can we solve that? Because, you know, our side is listening to one set of news, you know, the other side's listening to another set of news, and we're not agreeing on anything, and we're losing the faith in every institution. And I will say that it was hard not to gloat, to be able to say, yeah, these are the things I talked about when I was on Fox. I didn't. I was polite. Back in just a second, we have Illinois now with a $6 billion budget hole. We have an incredible story about a baby that has been condemned to death, sentenced to death, a baby in Europe. And a bizarre story about Jason Chaffetz seeking now money for congressional housing. Wasn't he the guy who slept on his couch the whole time?
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Good morning, America. It is the Flap Jackson Radio Show this morning, and we've got the number one hit with a mullet. It is from Little Lizzie Warren in Massachusetts. People's gotta die.
These cuts are blood money. People will die. Let's be very clear. Senate Republicans are paying for tax cuts for the wealthy with American lives.
People need kidneys. It's sad but decreed. Yet the senator's hoarding one more than she needs. I offer this bill and I hope you'll vote aye. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Traffic deaths have many crying with fear. Over 30,000 people are dying each year. This modest change I propose must be applied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Alcohol deaths are exceeding comparisons. Black people, white people, Native Americans. We need to ban alcohol. It can't be denied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Murders are bad. They have no defenders, yet many are committed by repeat offenders. I say lifetime in prison, whatever the crime. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Well, I don't have a bill or a groan to detail. I just need a short clip for my donor email. Tim, there's blood on your hands. You want people to die. That good? Cool. Tim, dinner at 5? Yeah. The car deaths I mentioned are terrible stuff. Doesn't seem one seatbelt is ever enough. You must vote for my act so that fewer will cry. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. The carbs, the container, we cannot ignore. Whipped cream's killing more people than ever before. This bill would be passed and be ratified if those people that didn't want people to die. Why not weigh all the costs, the effects, the results? Empathize with each other as if we were adults. Use our brains to craft arguments, not vilify. See that freedom's a traitor.
You want people to die!
I tried.
That is good.
Crossing the street is incredibly tough. People look left and right, but rarely look up.
It's one of my favorite. You have to see the visuals, too, to that. It's so good.
Well, you know, here's the problem. Nobody is serious about solving this. Nobody's serious. You know, that's been the number one question I've had meeting after meeting after meeting with people. Just before I'm getting ready to leave, somebody at the table will say, okay, we have to ask you about healthcare. And I'll say, really? You want to know about what I feel about healthcare? What is happening? Well, there's a 140% increase in people's premiums. And so they have to pay 140% more than they did. Now, we had problems before Obamacare. Yes, we did. Nobody was dying on the streets because that goes against everything that we believe as Americans. All of us, our emergency rooms were overflowing, but they were generally overflowing with people, mainly many of them, illegal immigrants. And in cities like Los Angeles, it was worse than cities in the middle of the country. But it wasn't right, and we were having a real problem. Now, if you really want to take care of people, because I have a daughter with cerebral palsy and epilepsy, and I know what her medicine costs every month, and there's no way she could ever afford it if she wasn't working and had good health care. So I understand that. And I know what it's like to lose your health care and then try to get health care if you have anybody in the family with a pre-existing conditions. You will work for the devil to be able to keep your health care. Literally, Pat, you and I have worked for somebody that I think there's a good case could be made. He was the devil. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, when you're in that situation and you must have your health care, you'll stay and you'll just take abuse and you'll do it for your kids or for your wife or for yourself because you can't afford to lose it. Well, I understand that. You want to take care of that? Good. Let's have that conversation. Let's have the conversation of where are people dying on the streets? They're not. Where are people suffering? They are. Let's look at that. Okay, let's solve that issue. And at the same time, we must solve the issue of a 140% increase in premiums because now everybody's health insurance sucks.
You just want people to die, don't you? Unbelievable.
Can I say, Stu, maybe a few people, yes. Yes. Maybe just a few people, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Unless but, that's about but, Jeffy, wait, that's controversial.
Hang on just a second. No. I want to come out of the closet. I'm going to come out of the closet. I'm going to do it right now. I believe in Darwin's natural selection. And if you are so damn stupid that you need the sign or the little sticker on the lawnmower, do not use on roof. You probably should be eaten by the lawnmower. I'm just saying.
You're arguing for natural selection, I believe.
I am arguing for natural selection. I am not arguing for not taking care of people who show up at the hospital because it goes against all of our values. And what's happening here is the political class, they know what they're doing. Elizabeth Warren, if she really truly cared, she would be making a compelling case. She would not be coming out and saying this is blood money. That's ridiculous that this is blood money.
Right. And this isn't even a conversation about health care. It never has been. It's a conversation about wealth care. The idea here is if you are, we cover everyone who is elderly. We cover people who are, many programs are set up for children. There are a million programs set up for poor people to get health care. The issue is if you have a health problem and you have a nice house, should you lose that house? Should you have a protection of the things you've built up in your wealth over your life? And I think there's an argument there to be made. Obviously, most people who are able to have some sort of ability to have, have assets, want those things to be protected. But I mean, the vast majority of the people who are rich enough, quote unquote, and I mean that globally because we all are rich globally. If you're rich enough to be able to have a nice house in the United States of America, you should probably be taking care of your own insurance. That is, it's a tough thing to talk about, but I mean, in reality, we have every single person gets coverage at the hospital, first of all, which is guaranteed to everyone, whether they can pay or not. And secondarily, coverage over things, if you don't have the ability to pay, there are programs set up. The question is, should you be able to get the insurance and keep all of your stuff too? Which is, in essence, you're just insuring the wealth.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, geez, not again. Have I crossed another line already?
You have. Have you heard the oppression here from the white male?
He just wants people to die. He wants people to die.
He wants
thousands
to take away.
Thousands and thousands of people are going to die because
how
of
are people
gear.
Going to be able to be human, really? Honestly, let's be frank. Mm-hmm. How can you possibly be human without a flat screen TV?
You can't.
You can't.
There's no way.
Really?
You're keeping
you know
people.
That, Stu. Don't
you're keeping
feign
people
surprise.
Oppressed. you're suppressing them and
yes.
and oppressing them
yes.
and it's sad. It really is, Stu.
Is it?
You really need to go home and really reflect.
Well, reevaluate.
Things.
I will say, in my defense, I do support Senator Max Hyperboli's proposal for a 4-mile-an-hour speed limit to protect people because I do not want people to die. As we learn from Reason, I mean, if we could just take these basic steps. Ban alcohol, speed limit 4 miles an hour, have everyone wear 2 seatbelts and 2 helmets when driving a car. Mm-hmm. These are basic steps, common sense solutions that we can kind of come to together and I think save people's lives.
Well, I think Warren Buffett said it best when he said the rich in America just have too much money. You know, and this coming from the world's second richest man, I think it means a lot more coming from him.
Well, to him, it's only Bill Gates he's talking about, right? And so he's frustrated he has more. Or is it the guy in Mexico? Is it Carlos Slim number one now?
It's pretty close with Jeff Bezos too now.
Yeah, Bezos is getting up.
He's up to 80 billion. Yeah.
I mean, soon Buffett could be fourth or fifth, and then what kind of fairness would we have?
None.
Right. He wants to make sure that we learn our lesson on fairness. You know, I don't know why we as a nation, why we're focusing on all of our problems, why we are focusing on all of the things that are going wrong. Here we are at the edge of the true technological revolution. This is going to take us, if we do it right and we don't tear each other apart, what is on the horizon could take us into a world to where most people don't have to work, where we our life will not be recognizable, and we will be able to explore and do things we never, ever thought possible. The difference between 1800 and 1900, the difference, not, I don't even think that, the difference between 1800 and probably 1950 is coming our way in the next 5 to 8 years. And all we're doing is talking about old problems created by an old system. Did you see what Elon Musk is doing now? Drilling underneath the city of Los Angeles? Making tunnels underneath Los Angeles? He is the Boring Company. Look it up. He is transforming everything he touches. Is there anybody who is in doubt that he's going to go to the moon or to the Mars? That he will put men on Mars, and if it's not him, it will be somebody that comes from his company or was inspired by him. I mean, we can accomplish anything right now. I was sitting at this table with people who have freed people to communicate in ways never before thought possible, to relate to people, to communicate with people, to live in ways that nobody thought possible just 10 years ago. And we wanted to talk about healthcare. And last night, one of the guys, he was from Canada, and he said, you know, the Canadian healthcare system and government has got to get involved. And I said, I can't believe that I'm sitting here at a table with you guys. And you're telling me every solution you guys are talking about, you're talking first about how do we get the government to do X, Y, or Z? How do we get the government to start playing nicely so they can figure out X, Y, or Z? There was a libertarian at the table who said they were talking about gridlock. And the libertarian said, I just want to remind everybody that that's what the Constitution was designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
To slow people down from making crazy decisions. It was designed to create gridlock so they couldn't do an awful lot. And they, you know, they didn't see the power, the intellectual and creative power that was just sitting at this table of about 20 leaders, and some of them remarkable. I mean, we all kind of signed a pact that nobody would say they had dinner with Glenn Beck. But here's these 20 guys who are remarkable. The titles that were at this table would blow you away. What they've done in their life would blow you away. And they don't have faith that they could create a better system? You're telling me that the minds in Silicon Valley can't come up with a better way? I use the example that I used yesterday. LASIK surgery was $2,500 in 2013. $2,500. No insurance coverage. So what happened to the people who were doing LASIK surgery? they figured it out, and the free market got LASIK surgery in 4 years. Got it from $2,500 to $300. If we just leave the free market truly alone, it will solve 90% of our problems. But if you leave it truly alone, those people, like all of the rich men sitting at this table, no women? Yes, there were several women there too. All of those people that are worth, some of them, hundreds of millions of dollars, they'd solve it. And they'd also, tragically, become more rich and then would have to decide to give that money away. And now this, when people walk into your home, what do you want them to feel? That's how Tanya and I, we always start with our home. We look at everything and we want our home to feel like a warm blanket. We want people to come into the house and go, oh man, I could just curl up in this house forever and stay. There are a few details in your home that you can use to help set the mood. And really, a lot of it has to do with the window treatments. I want you to go to Blinds.com. Blinds.com has everything you need for your windows. And if you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color, they're going to remake your blinds for free. But you're not going to pick the wrong color because they'll send you free samples to make sure everything looks as good in person as it does online. Every order gets free shipping at blinds.com. They have their huge sale. Once a year they have a sale this size, and if you use the promo code Beck, you're getting an additional 5% off site wide. It's blinds.com. Join them for their huge sale, 5% off additionally if you use the promo code Beck. It's blinds.com. Rules and restrictions do apply.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
You know what's really interesting is Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin has just signed in House Bill 128 into law, allowing the Kentucky public schools to teach courses on the Bible. Not mandatory courses, but be able to teach it. People are going crazy on both sides. We'll discuss that coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Glad that you are here. We've got a great call from Pennsylvania from Carolyn, a 19-year-old millennial, who I want you to hear what she has to say. Also, how many people would give up alcohol to see Donald Trump impeached? This is one of the most incredible things I have read and tells us everything we need to know about the left and the right in some ways. But you heard the headline, and most likely that's all you heard. When you read the full survey and see the results of everything, it's going to blow your mind. Also, another tweet from Donald Trump this morning that I don't understand. 13 Reasons Why is a TV show about teen suicide. And teens are gobbling this up because suicide is a real problem in America. A family is now blaming that show for their child's suicide. In fact, two teens have committed suicide and families are blaming that TV show. We'll get into that and so much more. It's going to be a fascinating hour. It begins right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
America, I want to introduce you to Carolyn as we meet for the very first time, calling from Pennsylvania. Hello, Carolyn.
Hi, Mr. Beck.
How are you? You can call me Glenn. You're 19 years old?
Okay. I'm actually 18, sir. I just graduated.
Wow, you are so polite. Let me guess. You were homeschooled? Yes or no?
Actually, no. No, okay. Sir. I went to Catholic school.
Okay. You grew up in a military family?
No, sir. I grew up...
Wait.
You're traditional.
Okay, I'm just trying to guess. You grew up in the South?
No, sir. Western PA.
You're doing a good job of reading, a cold reading.
I've gone through everything that usually is tied directly to yes, sir, no, sir. Where did you pick that up? It's refreshing and wonderful.
I mean, I grew up with a father who was a small business owner who taught his sons and daughters from a small age to go in for a strong handshake, look someone in the eye, and say yes or no, sir.
I love your dad.
He's been a very big fan of your show.
Oh, what does he do? What's his business?
Well, for most of my life, my father owned a furniture store company, so he would, you know, sell furniture to people in just the local area. But after the crash in 08, you know, things got rough, and he tried and tried again to start something up, but he bit his tongue and just took, you know, just took kind of a different path in life.
And what happened? He's selling drugs now?
No, he works for the state. He works for Penn, well, we call it PennDOT, but he works for the state just as a foreman.
That must be killing him. That must be killing him.
Yes, sir. He's part of a union, and I don't know. I kind of see it as a blessing because I now understand, you know, not just the side of the entrepreneur, but the side of the union man, and it's very humbling.
Carolyn, I want you to close your eyes right now and put your hand on the radio, and we're going to heal your father from his deep scars. My gosh, I can't imagine what it would be like to join a union after a lifetime of working for yourself, to join a union and then PennDOT. I used to live in Pennsylvania, so I know.
Yeah, he really is my role model because he always does live a life of integrity. You know, it's not sort of like in Ayn Rand's book, Fountainhead. You know, he'll take whatever job necessary as long as he keeps his integrity.
Wow, I could talk to you all day. You make me feel good. So, Carolyn, how can we help you?
You posed the question yesterday of how your life has changed since 2006. But I can kind of trace it back a little bit further. I first started talking about politics when I was in kindergarten. My parents, I came home crying on the bus in kindergarten because in 2004, no one wanted to discuss the Bush versus Gore reelection with me. And I was very, very much so into politics even at that young age. And I actually started watching your show in about fourth grade. In fourth grade, I had received a B in, I think it was my reading class. And so I wasn't allowed to watch TV for the rest of the school year. So every night my dad would let me sneak in and watch Bill O'Reilly's show, which really got me started. And then after that, I would come home after school every day and sit and watch your show at 5 o'clock exactly.
Wow. Carolyn, thank you so much. So that has damaged you and oppressed you?
No. No, sir. It's definitely taught me the importance of principles. You know, I know today in the political climate we live in, especially as a young student, it's hard to be able to see right versus left because it seems as though politics infiltrates not just culture, but the classroom. And what I've learned over time is that, yes, you know, people who are liberals can be friends with conservatives. The key is that you stand on principles and not rhetoric. I know after the very, very scary shooting last week at Capitol Hill, I texted a lot of my my more liberal friends, you know, supported Bernie Sanders, voted for Clinton. And I just said, hey, I'm someone who stands on the principle of individuality. And I know that just because one Bernie Sanders supporter did such a terrible act, that does not make all Bernie Sanders supporters terrible people. And I just wanted to remind them that.
And what was their response?
And that I loved them.
What was their response?
A lot of them were just so, so grateful that I showed love. And they said, Carolyn, you've taught me that not all Trump supporters are KKK members, or not all Trump supporters are Nazis. Because that, if you don't show love and reach out during those easy moments, it can be easy to let the status quo persist. And I just wanted to be able to show, you know, just little acts of love. And it does change people's minds rather quickly when you do that.
You know, it's funny. I was having dinner last night with some Silicon Valley and some Hollywood lefties. And as we were talking, a couple of them sounded very much like people that one person in particular that I spoke yesterday to on the radio. A woman called, and she was very animated and felt that I was, you know, betraying the cause by saying that we have to change our language, and we have to be very aware of how we're talking, because we can make an impact for the good as opposed to just building up more walls. And most of the people that were at dinner with me last night, they felt the same way, and they were looking for a way to start talking to people and not necessarily about politics, just talking to people. And one of the guys said something along the lines of, you know, we need to fix things politically. We need the government to fix all of these things. And, you know, the language is not going to break through. And I have found, I mean, I said, I'm sitting with you guys because I changed my language, and I haven't changed a thing in my policy and my principles, but we're talking. So how can you not say that it doesn't work? It does.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, sir. I know. I think it's very interesting that you're discussing, you know, the idea of care versus harm, liberty and oppression, because last summer I was actually sitting in a lecture where we were discussing, you know, political campaigning and the such, and the speaker put up on the screen this chart about how liberals use certain words and they react to certain words versus conservatives. And it was the same kind of idea of liberty, care, harm, justice.
Yes.
And I just sat there and I thought, you know, that's it. That's the secret. And so ever since then, I've been thankfully able to engage some of my liberal friends on things such as, you know, Planned Parenthood and being pro-life and really some hot button topics. But if you go in and speak their language,
and
you go in with genuine love and intellectual curiosity, which most of my liberal friends are curious. They want to know what a conservative believes, why we believe what we believe. They don't want to just label everyone. They do want to know. And if you go in from that approach, they are much more open and much more understanding. They may not change their minds, but they want to understand the same way we should want to understand.
And it's really amazing. And I have example after example after example of this. People don't know how to be able to have that dialogue, but they want that dialogue. And if you will model it, they will fall into it. And it's, you know, one of the guys that was there last night said, you know, I read a book, and he said, it totally changed my mind, totally changed my mind. And he said, it is The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt, which is the book that really takes the care and harm and liberty and oppression and is teaching me, has totally changed the way I view things. And you can. I spoke at a table with 20 Silicon Valley
liberals last night, one libertarian, and we spoke about abortion. And I talked about how they see oppression of women, and they all shook their heads. And I said, we see sanctity. And I could, you know, feel their eyes roll up. And I said, and that's a word that you guys don't speak. So let's just talk about harm to women. And we had this conversation, and it was, I don't know if anybody changed their mind or anything, but at least it didn't devolve into where it usually devolves. I mean, what one of the guys who was with me, he sat back from, you know, the table, and he said, I said, what did you notice about things? And he said, I was watching people and listening, and he said, as you were speaking, I heard so many people say, huh, wow. Yeah. And that's the beginning of it. Just opening exactly. people's minds to, that's not what I thought at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as soon as that spark kind of goes off in someone's mind and the wheels start to turn, it's not that you should go in with the approach of you want to change your mind, but you just want to understand, and they want to understand. That's when real change happens.
The problems that I have with talking to people is when they say, how do you win? Or they're trying to win the argument. Martin Luther King said, and he is absolutely right, winning assumes that there's going to be a loser, and you want everyone walking from the table feeling that they've won, that they've reconciled with somebody else. And because we're going to have to, if you play this out in your head, if the Democrats get absolutely everything that they want, and let's say they rule for the next 20 years and they get this socialist utopia, well, there are going to be people like me and maybe you that were, no, never. I'm not going there. I won't buy into it. I'm not going to speak that language. I will not go over the cliff with the rest of humanity because it's easier. I will stand for what I believe is the truth. So what do they do with that 10 to 30% of the population that doesn't comply? Well, usually it's round them up and kill them or put them in a training camp or whatever. That's what happens. And the same would happen if you are a big government person on the right. What are you going to do with the people that disagree with you that will never change their mind? You have to reconcile with them and live in peace. And that has to be done before we talk about any policies. We have to start trusting each other. Carolyn, quickly, what do you want to do for a living?
I've not thought that far. I will be attending Hillsdale College in the fall, where I'll be studying politics and history.
Yep.
And I know I joke with my mother. I was adopted from South Korea, so I can't run for president. But I like to joke with my parents that I would like to find a way to be first lady, because the same way Jackie Kennedy went in and sort of restored the White House with the teary design. Yeah. I always say I'd like to restore it with making it the people's house again, allowing people from all over the country to come in and, you know, have lunch with the president or the first lady and just spend hours talking and really knowing what they want to hear.
Carolyn, I would love to spend more time with you. I would like to have our producers grab your phone number. I'd like to have you on at least once a year to see that you have held the course all the way through school. And if you're ever looking for an internship, I would love to have you intern directly with me. So I want to put you on hold and we'll get your phone numbers. Thank you so much. And say hello to your father and your mother. Now this, Illinois is not able to put a budget together if they're not by tomorrow. It will be the first state to see its debt plunge into junk bond status. Now, what does that mean? That means we have a state going belly up. Illinois has a $14.5 billion bill that is overdue, $130 billion in unfunded pension obligations. And this is a quote from the governor. We can't manage our money. We're like a banana republic. This can change everything and should be a massive wake-up call that everything that you worried about and we talked about and wanted to prepare for is coming. Nothing is changing because the problems are at the state level as much as they are at the federal level. I want you to get a free report from Goldline from President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman. He has identified five threats that can rock, literally rock the world. You get it for free by calling Goldline right now, 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. They're also extending their price protection program for as little as $2,500. You're going to get 3 months of price protection, and the more you spend, the more protection you get, all the way up to a year's price protection at $25,000 investment. That means you put $25,000 in. If gold loses 4%, they're going to give you 4% more at the end of the year in gold. And you don't even have to call them. They call you. It's remarkable. Nobody else does this with an investment. Make sure you read their risk information. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you at 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to it. We've got an amazing feud going on now with tweets between Mika and Donald Trump that is just, I mean, it's a soap opera. It is. Our life has become a soap opera. And I want to give you this amazing study. How many people would give up alcohol to see Donald Trump impeached? If you saw this yesterday, you might have heard that 73.3% of Democrats say they would give up alcohol for the rest of their life if it meant that President Trump would be impeached tomorrow. 73.3. 17% of Republicans said they would give up alcohol for the rest of their life. Now, one more, and then I got to take a break and get to the real news. The media, if the media stopped writing negative things about President Trump, 6.5% of Democrats said they would give up alcohol forever, and 30.6% of Republicans said they would give up alcohol forever. Now, that was what made the headlines. But that was only one of the questions, or two of the questions, that they asked these people. Would you give up alcohol if? When you read the entire study, oh, we learn so very much about the left and the right and men and women. We get to that when we come back.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. There's two stories that we've got to get to before the top of the hour. We have a great show. If you've just joined us, thank you so much for listening. I want to give you the story that maybe you read just the headline and you passed. You shouldn't have. Or maybe what source you were reading only gave you part of the story. They shouldn't have. This is a fantastic story. Here's how many people would give up alcohol to see Donald Trump impeached. Now, researchers asked, will you give up alcohol for the rest of your life if, first question, President Trump would be impeached tomorrow? 73% of Democrats and 17% of Republicans said yes. First of all, I don't believe them at all. As a guy who is a recovering alcoholic, not a chance in the world.
No way.
But 73% said, remember this number, 73% said yes. The next question was, would you give up alcohol for the rest of your life if the media stopped writing negative things about President Trump? 6.5% of Democrats said yes. 30.6 of Republicans said yes. I thought that was an impressive number because it shows that the majority of Republicans don't want to shut the press down. Either that or they just really love alcohol. Now, here's where the story gets good, because this was a survey about the greater good. Will you give up something that is almost impossible to give up for the greater good? And this is where the rubber meets the road. For instance, I'm in a faith that we don't drink coffee. And, you know, people will say, oh, man, I've, you know, really watched you and your faith and you know, talked to you about it. And it's really great. But I could just never give up coffee. I'm like, well, then you don't really understand. You don't really understand. Because if it's like, God or coffee? And, you know, and that's not really the choice, but.
Well, I mean, Folgers Instant Crystals are the richest, most aromatic kind of coffee.
And Jim doesn't have a second cup back at home. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. So when you're asking, you know, will you give up alcohol for the rest of your life? And 73% say yes. A, I don't believe you. Second, that's quite a commitment. You really must believe in it. So what else do you really believe in? Listen to these. If you could, would you give up alcohol for the remainder of your life if it meant stopping global climate change? Now, they didn't break it out left and right, which I would have loved to see.
Oh, me too.
I know. They broke this one up, men and women. Halting global climate change, 23% of men said yes. 17% of women said yes. Wait. So only 23% who these people believe that this is the end of the world? That this is going to destroy all of us and kill us and just kill the planet, every animal, every tree, and every living being in 100 years will be dead, but only 23% of the men and 17% of the women say, I'm willing to give up alcohol to do that? Wow, how selfish or how little you actually believe.
That's amazing. I mean, this they say this is a bigger threat than terrorism,
yes,
than global nuclear war.
I will tell you, in the dinner I had last night, there was a foreigner there at the table, and I don't want to give any details about these people because you know, in their circles they could be identified, and we had a private conversation last night, so I don't want to quote anybody, and I don't want to reveal who was there. But I will tell you that this person who is not from America or North America was so passionate about global warming. I mean, almost wept, I think, about how much danger we are in because of global warming. And people truly believe that, or it's so they say. But that's the number? 23% of Americans would say they would give up alcohol to stop it? It seems pretty selfish. But wait, there's more. How many people would give up alcohol if 10 children in another country would gain access to clean drinking water? Okay. You'll give up alcohol for the rest of your life, which really means nothing. Really means nothing. You'll give up if 10 children in another country could have clean, non-poison water.
And how often have we heard, if it saves one
just
person,
one.
Just one. Isn't
just
it
one.
Worth it?
Just one. Men, listen to this. Men, 35.1%. Now you'd think, okay, well, that's guys. Uh-huh. Women, 19.3%.
Wow.
That's kind of disturbing. that men are more willing to give up alcohol than women are to save children. How about this one? Would you give up alcohol for the rest of your life? Now think of this. If it would save the life of a stranger, 36% said yes. Of men, 36.
What?
Women, 25.8.
It's lower for women?
Yes. Yes.
And both the stranger and the children. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Okay, so there's one more. Stu, I'm gonna give you this survey, and I want you to go in and look at it for tomorrow's show, because there's a reason they didn't do left and right. Why did they stop breaking it up on Democrats and Republicans? My guess is, as this was reported in the Huffington Post, my guess is, and I could be wrong, that it shows that there are more Republicans that would save the life of children, et cetera, et cetera.
I bet that's true.
I could be wrong, but look into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so saving the life of one stranger, 36% of men, 25% of women, 10 children in another country gain access to clean and safe water, 35% of men, 19% of women. Halting global climate change is the lowest so far. 12 points behind everything else. Men, 23%, women, 17%. And here's the kicker. Would you give up alcohol for the rest of your life if it meant that tomorrow we would discover the cure for cancer? Now, I would think that number would be yes to everyone except an alcoholic who was like, I try, but I can't guarantee. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Cure for cancer tomorrow. 7.6% of men, 5.6% of women.
That is, unbelievable.
That can't be right.
Unbelievable.
I know. Look it up. It is a survey of 1,000 people, detox.net. Check it out, Stu. And give me the report on that tomorrow.
Is it because they don't believe that by giving up alcohol, that will make
No, you have to have a cure suspension. Available? You have to have a suspension of belief anyway. You know, it's like these people who will go to like Star Wars and they're like, nah, I don't think so because there's no animals. There's no animals like that. What? That was your problem? Okay, one other story. When we come back, about a feud that I swear shows we're living in a soap opera. When we come back, first, let me tell you about LifeLock, a new ransomware attack sweeping across the globe like wildfire, even worse than WannaCry. I got an alert. Well, was this yesterday that this happened? Petya ransomware encrypts and locks your entire hard drive, not just the individual files. It has already crippled global banks, media companies, governments across multiple countries. It's pretty staggering what is going on. What a surprise. It looks like it originated in possibly Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine? Who would want to cripple the Ukraine? Oh, I remember now. Putin. That's why Norton and LifeLock have joined forces to help protect against the evolving threats to everyone's digital security. And this is something that I'm telling you, you need to do, because there is coming a time where you will not be able to access your bank. You won't be able to access even your computer or perhaps your computer at work. It is going to hit all of us. And nobody can stop all cyber threats, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But with Norton and LifeLock, you have the most effective cyber defense out there. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or go to LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Norton60. Norton60 for details to receive the Norton Security Deluxe for a year with an additional LifeLock membership. So that's a $90 value. You get your LifeLock membership for 60 days, risk-free, and Norton Security Deluxe. Promo code Norton60, 1-800-LIFELOCK, or lifelock.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
So, who's more likely to give up alcohol? As we were talking about this, and Stu went to the detox.net, the stats are clear there. The Huffington Post is so damn confusing the way they put this together that the stats for Donald Trump are who would give up alcohol.
Yeah, which I think is how you reported that.
Yes, I did.
Right? Yeah.
And then the ones about cure for cancer and global climate change, et cetera,
that was who wouldn't.
Who wouldn't, but did you know, have you seen the Huffington Post, the way it's written?
Yeah, it's not just them, too. It's several sources are kind of reporting this the wrong way. So
it's completely the wrong way. And then it's followed again with who would. For instance, millennials, listen to this. Millennials were slightly more willing to lose a finger than to give up alcohol. Now, am I reading that one right?
I think so. Yeah. But so that's why it looked like women looked worse in this survey.
Right, which is
really
good.
The other way around.
News.
Women look better than men, as they almost always do in these kinds of things.
And so we should say, they reversed the phrasing of the question on the four points we were talking about with, would you give up the alcohol for the rest of your life for these things? It's just a weird way
they
asked
it. For the cure for cancer, it was only 7.6% of men wouldn't give up alcohol. Right. 5.6 of women.
So that's very important because it shows that not everyone in our society are the worst people on earth.
Yeah, and we have 7 or 8% that you just
that are alcoholics.
Yes,
that are alcoholics.
But still, how is that number not zero in reality?
You know what? When you're asked for that, it should be zero.
Yeah.
In reality, it probably would be less than 10% and not zero.
Right. Because some people wouldn't be able to stop themselves. And I think there's always with these polls. There's a margin of error. There are people who may have said the thing the wrong way. There's also people
and
who
there's
are
just bad people. Harry Reid, for instance.
Yeah, there you go.
You know.
Also,
for example,
and all
for
the
example,
Republicans who just—it's blood money, really. This is
well,
blood
right,
money.
Who just want people to die?
To die.
Yes.
Right.
Could you go back tomorrow and do that research and see if you could break it out to Republicans and Democrats on both of those?
Yeah, I'll look into it and see if I can find all the crosstabs and everything and look at
it. Yeah, it was interesting that they started, or at least, you know, in your survey that you were reading from HuffPo, they started breaking it down that way, and then they stopped. Then it was
and
just
then they
men
ended,
and women.
No, yeah. And then they ended it with who would give up alcohol. I mean, it's weird the way they've phrased this. Wine drinkers are more likely to give up sex for alcohol than beer or liquor drinkers. Let me see if I have this right. Wine drinkers were more likely to give up sex for alcohol than beer or liquor drinkers.
Correct. That is what it
says. What the hell is that? Beer drinkers, 15%, say they would give up sex for alcohol. 15% of hard liquor drinkers would give up sex. And 24% who drink wine would give up sex for wine.
Women like wine more.
What?
There's your summary.
There's your answer.
Or like sex less.
Well, both.
Yep. Women were more likely than men to end a relationship if their partner didn't approve of their alcohol use. 28% of men, 34% of women.
It's an interesting idea in that, looking at, they go through also, for a month, would you give up these things for alcohol? I'd rather give up going to the movies for alcohol, 65% of people. I'd rather give up social media instead of alcohol for a month of alcohol, 50%. I'd rather give up coffee than for a month of alcohol, 47.5%.
You know what? I have to tell you, let's revisit this tomorrow because I think this is an important topic. As an alcoholic, I think that there are a lot of people that may not be alcoholics that use alcohol as a real escape, much more than movies. They use alcohol mm-hmm. as an escape from their life. I want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And 9 months after the election of Donald Trump is next month. What will the birth rate be like? Will it be up or down over the next 2 months? I have a theory on that. We'll share it tomorrow.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Newsweek says Democrats now want a socialist to lead their party more than a capitalist. I absolutely believe that, and it's about time that we actually have that conversation. Are we going to go for capitalism, or are we going to go for socialism? But we need an actual capitalist. We need somebody who understands Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, and more importantly, the book that is never taught in business school, that is the companion to that by Adam Smith, Moral Sentiments, that's where we get the invisible hand of the market, and how capitalism, unless it is used by a moral and decent society, it will choke society to death. We need to have those real discussions, and I want to have a discussion with you on capitalism and socialism and how we need to teach it to our youth. We need to, each of us, and I need to get busy on the stick and start really teaching children and teaching millennials. I think you get it. I think what I heard yesterday from several people on the show when I was listening to you, which I want to do much more often, what I heard yesterday was, Glenn, help us with the families and the children. So we'll get into that a little bit. Also, if you notice the feuds that are going on, I mean, the open-air feuds. There's two conservatives that are chopping each other into little pieces. And we have the president chopping some of his friends in little pieces. And this one is between the president and Mika from Morning Joe. And it's, you know, William Shatner told me he likes to watch or listen to my show because he said, it's like a fire, and there's a certain beauty of just watching it burn to the ground. And I'd like to quote William Shatner on that. It's, this feud with Mika is like a fire, and I'm fascinated by just watching it burn down to the ground. We begin there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. So, this morning, while you are getting up for work, and you probably rolled out of bed and thought, when is it going to be Friday? You rolled out of bed, you've got a million things on your mind. You are trying to make ends meet. You have health care and your premiums up 140%. You're worried about your job. You're worried about making ends meet. You're worried about your kids and their education. Even in primary school, you're worried about what's being taught. You're watching your education and what do I do about college, because A, no one can afford college in the last 8 years, it's gone up over 400%. Nobody's discussing that. Nobody's really discussing, what do I do for a job? As much as everybody wants to talk about healthcare, they're not talking about healthcare. They're talking about power. No one is actually looking at how to solve the healthcare crisis that we now have in America. And you get up and you see a story that a senator, a Republican senator that is supportive of Donald Trump and supportive of Trump care, left the White House yesterday and said the president doesn't have, I want to make sure I read this right. The president, I met with him yesterday and he seemed to not really understand what was happening with his own bill. The president, quoting, the president did not have a grasp of some of the basic elements of the Senate plan. He was especially confused, still quoting, when the moderate Republican complained that opponents of the bill would cast it as a massive tax break for the wealthy. Well, this set the president off on fake news again and enemies. And then as you're getting up thinking, please tell me it's Friday, the president tweets this. This was tweeted this morning about 7 a.m. I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Then how come low IQ crazy Mika, along with Psycho Joe, came to Mar-a-Lago, the next tweet, came to Mar-a-Lago three nights in a row around New Year's Eve and, quote, insisted on joining me. She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no. Okay. All right. Hang on just a second. Let's just look at this. First of all, these were people that were friends, have been friends, went to him. He was one of the first who knew that they were getting married. He had lunch with them. He and the White House confirmed that they had lunch. And the White House confirmed that he had said that you should have it at the White House. His son said, I don't remember who it was, could marry you at the White House. And Donald Trump said, well, I can marry you. The president could marry you. So they're close enough friends to have that conversation.
Well, yeah, and Mika and Joe covered for him the whole campaign.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, the whole campaign.
And he boasted about how great they were, and that's where he gets his news. And he does watch Joe and Mika. Then, on New Year's Eve, he has them stay for three nights at Mar-a-Lago. He's got friends staying for three nights at Mar-a-Lago. She comes down. Apparently, she has plastic surgery. And to quote him, she's bleeding from her whatever. And what friend, A, says, oh, your face is bleeding. No, I don't want you around me. What friend says that? And B, what friend says that a woman was having plastic surgery, let alone a woman was having plastic surgery and bleeding all over and I couldn't stand it? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so now Mika responds. You have the Mika tweaks, do you not, Stu?
Well, it kind of goes back to what caused this, because there's always, obviously, he was watching Morning Joe. No one told him about it. He was watching it. So he tweeted afterwards, and it seems to be what began this was she made a comment about this story about the fake Time magazine cover. We didn't talk about this yesterday, Eric, that's right, because you had you did the call-in show yesterday. We didn't mention it. But the bottom line was Trump had a fake cover of Time magazine made, and he put it up in his golf clubs to look like he was on the cover of Time magazine.
Talk about fake news.
Right.
Well, okay, so hang on just a second. Look, give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a celebrity, blah, blah, blah. It's a golf course and golf resort. And, you know, it's PR. It is fake. It's fake news, but it's PR.
Yeah, you sure? Sure, you play that game. I'm not going to, but yes, he was.
Yeah, I'm just trying to give him the benefit of the
doubt. I
realize
that.
It's interesting how Time discovered it, too. They saw that up on his wall, and they're like, wait a minute, we didn't. That's not our cover. So they released every cover of Time magazine from that year. And interestingly, there was somebody fairly prominent on the cover of Time magazine that
year.
For
real?
Yeah, not Donald Trump, but somebody sticking their tongue out.
some crazy guy.
Some crazy guy.
That hurts. That hurts.
So, Glenn, you were actually on the cover while Donald was making fake ones.
Yeah.
Funny because I don't have that. He posted it. Here's where it got weird is apparently that fake cover is posted at Mar-a-Lago as well. That's not a public space. That's his place. And while he has a lot of people over to Mar-a-Lago, et cetera, that's weird. I mean, I don't have the picture of me on the cover of Time magazine in my house. I mean, we have it, you know, in the wall on one of the walls of the studios because people come in and visit, et cetera, but I don't have a cover of me on Time magazine at my house. He's got a fake one of him. In his house. Weird.
But to your point, I think you can, yeah. And this is what's weird about this, because you can obviously excuse. He's trying to make himself look good at his golf clubs and look.
Sure.
And so they show
and
this.
And he is a star, and, you know, and the headline was, you know, Celebrity Apprentice hits ratings high, and I think that was accurate at the time that came out. I mean, so he's just promoting himself. He's promoting the image of success, and he was having real success at the time.
It's definitely a weird thing to do to glamour shot yourself on the cover of a magazine when you're a big celebrity already. Like, that's a strange thing to do. And they released the side-by-side covers where they took the headlines from the real cover and put them on the fake cover. It's a very strange thing to do. However, completely excusable from a wild celebrity who tweets crazy things. The same thing about this tweet. It's completely acceptable from him as a host of The Apprentice to tweet things about Mika in a derogatory way. I mean, you know, it's what we'd expect out of a lot of celebrities. As a president, it does come off as very strange.
I'm sorry. You know what? I think
you're inappropriate.
I mean, it's completely inappropriate. I mean, you want to talk. You don't.
That's not good.
You don't. Again, I'm stuck on the, she was at my house for 3 days. She was bleeding so badly from a facelift. Her face was bleeding. I said, no, you can't come to the party. I mean, I just can't get past that on like 800 different levels.
Right. So she was talking about this Time magazine cover, story. She said he has his arms crossed. Maybe he was doing that to hide his teensy hands. And that's what they think set him off. On this particular Twitter rant. So she has now responded with a tweet of an old Cheerios ad that says, you know, made for teeny hands. So now they're just kind of going back and forth. And they do have a weird relationship. They do seemingly. They have a very strange
relationship. But if it's true, made for teeny hands, if it's true that he is really super sensitive of his hands, that's like friendship ending stuff.
Maybe, but they've had so many friendship-ending moments, and times you think, because I mean, last time they got really pissed at each other is when Trump tweeted about the previously unknown relationship between Joe and Mika, and he was like, "Look, you know, I brought his girlfriend in for this," and like he and you know, having personal friend knowledge of their relationship, but that was not public. He just sort of tweeted it to torture them.
You know who we have to have on. We have to have Don Imus on and ask him about, because he has one of those relationships with Donald Trump of, you know, there's nobody better at taking a pounding and giving a pounding than Don Imus.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe there's, you know, maybe this is what Donald Trump does for fun. He pounds and they pound back, like me and Bill O'Reilly or me and Don Imus. Some of the Don Imus... When he dies, I swear I'm going to publish a little bathroom reader of just our emails back to each other because they're hysterical on just pounding each other into the ground. And I bet he knows Joe and Mika quite well. or at least has people that know. I wonder if this is an inside pounding. I wonder if this is something that just, you know, gets people to talk, and Joe and Mika and Donald like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like there's an element of that. They seem to fall in and out of love. Remember, they had a video where they were asking him what areas they wanted him to go into so they could coddle him through the interview. So, they've obviously fallen in love and out of love many times.
This is really interesting because when I come back, I'm going to tell you something that Roger Ailes told me about Al Sharpton. And it helped me make my decision of leaving Fox very easily, very easy. And it might be the same thing here. It just might be the same thing here because Donald Trump thought a lot like Roger Ailes in many ways. We'll get to that here coming up in just a second. And now this, what are you thinking about when you're at work? You should be thinking about work, should be thinking about the next project. I personally think about sleep. How long before I can go home and just go back to sleep? Most people think that the time to worry about your house and somebody breaking in is at night. That is the least likely time for burglars to break in. They don't know if you have a gun. Well, if you're in California, you don't. But if you don't have a gun, they don't know. They don't want trouble. They just want your stuff most times. So while you're working, so are they. And that's when they break into your house. Simply Safe is a completely wireless system that is so easy to install. You can build this arsenal for all day, all night protection in under an hour. And it is unbelievably inexpensive. It is something that for $500 or $600, you're going to be able to have absolutely everything you need to make sure that nobody's opening up a window, your house isn't going to burn down, you've got cameras, high definition cameras. You're going to be able to secure your home. And for $14.95 a month, you're going to get the 24/7 security. So I'm not sure about all the prices of how much everything costs, but it's really inexpensive, especially if you're looking at any other service and you own it. It's yours. Simply Safe. No contracts, round-the-clock professional monitoring. You own the system. $14.99 a month. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Get a special 10% discount off your home security system when you order today. It's simplysafebeck.com. Simplysafebeck.com.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We have to get Don Imus on tomorrow. Bill O'Reilly will be on with us tomorrow. Got to see if we can get Don Imus on at this time tomorrow to talk about the feud between Donald Trump and Mika and Joe, because I think he knows all three of them. And when I was at Fox, Roger Ailes said to me at one point, that I needed to be friends with all of the Republicans. And, you know, we all love the Constitution, but there's things we have to do. And I'm like, okay. And he said, Glenn, you don't know how to play the game. And I said, well, because I'm not playing a game. And he said, you don't understand how it works. He said, look, it's like with Al Sharpton. I know that from time to time, he's got to take a pound of flesh from me. And so I give him this pound of flesh. And then a few months later, I'll take a pound of flesh from him because it'll help me. And then we go and have dinner. And I was like, huh. Yeah. I'm not playing a game. And his advice to me was that you're not going to survive. Oh, okay. Then I won't survive. I'm perfectly fine with that. And I wonder if that's not what's happening here, where he has people that he knows, we're fine, we're all going to have dinner, you're going to come down to Mar-a-Lago and we'll be fine, but I need a pound of flesh from you right now, and you can take a pound of my flesh too. But it's good for all of us, you know, people like that think. What do you think of that theory?
I think it's possible. They do seem to have a weird relationship of that sort. And maybe even closer than a Roger Al Sharpton relationship.
Roger was not pals with with Al. He just knew, you know, I think the calls were made in advance. Listen, I'm gonna have to have a rally in front of Fox News, and you know, just we'll talk about it later. And I think that's what he meant.
Yeah, I don't know. They keep coming back together and being invited to each other's houses and everything. So maybe there is that element there. There's something weird about this particular thing, and it comes something you've been talking about a lot of, like violating that I don't know. It's the sanctity part where, like, yes, you'll have the oppression of the woman from the left that they'll always relate with. But here, like, the right seems to be being upset about this particular tweet. And maybe you're talking about a woman's bleeding face. There's something that just gutturally changes you about that.
Yes.
And yes. It's so far, a lot of people on the right are really upset about this. And it's taking a different life than some of his previous tweets.
Back in just a minute with some insight from California about Californians.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. From Los Angeles, California, in the Mercury Studios at the Pacific, we are so glad that you have joined us. Last night, I had dinner at here in the Los Angeles area at a very trendy restaurant, and it was a dinner that was not my dinner. It was held, I guess you would say, kind of in my honor or whatever. I was kind of like the bearded lady, I think. A friend of mine here in Los Angeles that is a very big VC guy, when he found out I was coming to L.A., said, Glenn, I want you to meet some of my friends. We have to have dinner. They have to hear you speak. And I said, okay. And he said, you know, what would be helpful to you? What kind of people would you like to speak to? And I said, anybody who has taken off their team jersey or about to take off their team jersey and wants to fix the country and wants to heal and just doesn't want to talk about politics. So there were about 20 people that showed up, and I wish I could give you more information than I can, but this was one of those meetings that was up in a, you know, up in a upstairs room all by ourselves, and when I came out, there were paparazzi there. I mean, it was weird, and we kind of have a confidentiality agreement of, I'm not going to share what they say. They're not going to share what I say. We're just going to be able to talk to each other openly about anything. Robert, who runs realestateagentsitrust.com, Robert is my closest friend, and I say that, you know, with Pat sitting right there. Pat's one of my closest friends as well. Pat and Robert are dear, dear friends. Robert is more like my brother, as he grew up with me and we spent, you know, our childhoods together. And his family is kind of, or my family is kind of his family in many ways. And he also tells me, like Pat does, the hard truth that really nobody else will. And he came into me, it was about 8 months ago, where you said, you know, I have to tell you something, Glenn. I've known you your whole childhood, and your whole life has been about a mission, and I can't figure out your mission anymore, and I don't want to work with you if we're not on a mission. And it was true, and I said, you're right. Because I can't find it anymore. I don't know how. I don't know what to do. I don't know an answer. We're not going back to the mall and, you know, march on Washington, because that's not going to work. And so he and another guy had said something to me that really woke me up. And so I have been, for the last 4 to 6 months, really on the trail of something that I think will really work. When I started talking about it on the air, and more importantly, I started talking about it about 4 months ago internally, Robert didn't like the answer, did you?
I did not.
Yeah, right. And the answer is what I've been talking about here for the last few weeks, and that is we got to change our language, and we have to get inside and start talking to people, because politics will only kill us. We have to first restore the trust in one another, that we're not monsters on our side or on their side. And when I said that to Robert, didn't agree.
It's been a long journey. the dinner last night, I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to go. I just not my favorite thing to sit in a room with a bunch of people who don't share my viewpoints, maybe my values. I don't know. And so I just didn't want to be there. I just didn't see.
Yeah.
Why are we here?
Okay. So when you left, do you think the majority of the room do share your values?
Yes.
Yes. So that was a surprise in some regard.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that's true with almost everybody I've met. I meet politicians and I meet hardcore, it's the party. We got to win for the party. I don't find that on either side.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it in people that I disagree with politically a lot, if you listen and you know how to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you observe last night?
So I want to step back just a little bit and say that for some time, it's been really kind of confusing and disheartening at times, because 10 years ago, you started teaching me about politics and the differences between progressives. And,
yeah.
And so we went down this journey, and it was like, oh, the mission's really clear. I get it. And then all of a sudden, things just went, whoop, what just happened? Now what?
We're talking to progressives? I thought you said progressives were cancer.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was my kind of...
your stumbling block.
Yeah, and also kind of going into the lion's den, if you will, last night. It was like, I don't want to get this stuff rammed down my throat. It's not in my core. I'm not going to believe it. I can't get there. What I saw last night, though, was, and I've seen it internally, even in our own building lately, is that, because we work with people who have different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I saw last night was a couple of things. And one of them was that the host of the event did a masterful job, because he brought people to the table, like you said, that had either taken off the journey or jersey or wanted to.
Right.
But what I saw
didn't
was...
didn't know how.
No, exactly.
They didn't know how.
Exactly. And it was two things that really jumped out at me. One was that they were open, and that's not typical.
Mm-mm.
Right? You would expect that you'd walk into a room very closed and maybe even somewhat hostile.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing could be further from the truth. They were open. They were wearing it on their sleeve. Just good, decent people.
And they were afraid of both sides of the aisle.
I was there 9 years ago. That's what we held in common.
Yeah.
I was exactly where they were 9 years ago, and I was freaking out.
Yeah.
So what I saw in them was, I'm at least for tonight, I'm going to be open, and I'm going to come with an open mind and listen to the host and his guest, Glenn. What I saw throughout the evening, though, was that they, even when we went around the room and they said who they were and what they did and kind of where they were, you saw a softening start there, but there was still, they kind of made their positions pretty clear.
yes, they did,
right?
Yes, they did, especially the guy, healthcare, universal healthcare, and gun control.
What are you people thinking? My gosh.
It was almost that strong.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I saw as the evening progressed was, because of your language and your absolute openness to, I'm here to listen, I want to have the conversation, at no time during the evening did you waver from who you were and what your values were and what your beliefs in the way that the direction of the country needed to proceed. Never wavered. But what I saw was that there was an openness to you which took their defenses down. Mm-hmm. And the language that was being spoken by the end of the evening was almost in reverence to your path. And what they were seeking from you was, okay, we agree. Now, kind of, how are we going to get there, and how do we resolve these issues that are major issues?
And what was amazing is the room kind of split.
Mm-hmm.
there were those who still couldn't get past the agenda of politics.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept saying, yes, but we need to get that. You know, you and Van Jones need to get together. And I kept saying,
mm-hmm.
no,
mm-hmm.
no. First of all, I don't know if Van Jones is an honest broker. And I've done my homework on Van Jones. But it won't be fixed, A, by two people. It's not going to be fixed that way. It has to be modeled by many people. And the other is, it cannot be about politics. You're not going to be able to solve this politically. You have to solve first the distrust and the hatred of one another. Once we trust one another, not politicians, no politicians can be involved. No pundits, no parties, none of that can be involved. Neighbors need to talk to neighbors. And when that happens, you then have a chance, because we'll start to elect different kinds of people.
Well, and I think there's a role for those types. These people are brilliant. They are wildly successful. They can be the future. They can help lead the conversation.
These people, I wish I could tell you who they who they were. You may not know their names. Some of their names you would know, but you wouldn't know necessarily their names. But you would definitely know the products and the things that they have invented and are doing right now. These were big Silicon Valley movers and shakers that do control a lot of the dialogue. And to hear them talk about socialists and how some of them I spoke to privately, some of them were as afraid, if not more so, of the left than they were of the right. And they were very concerned about the right, but they were very concerned about freedom of speech on campuses, very concerned about the violence that is happening now from the left. They were very open and honest, and it was really refreshing to hear. They also, you know, they all had a deep problem with Donald Trump, but it was interesting. One guy said to me, he was concerned about the socialist leanings of Donald Trump, mm-hmm. because he felt that in 2020, there was a chance that we would have two socialists running. One would be a Donald Trump sort of big government socialism, and the other was an actual Bernie Sanders type socialist. And they were afraid it wouldn't be the nice, kind old man Bernie Sanders. It would be a lion. And not everybody, of course, held that view. That's one guy who told me that. And I found that to be so far away from where they were 9 months ago.
Yeah, well, remember, part of the conversation was how hypocritical they felt because things like state rights.
Oh, my gosh. To hear one of the guys say, and I said this to him, I said, do you know what that would mean if you would go on television and say that? He said, we are so hypocritical. He said, we've been against state rights, and we've never understood when people like you said state rights. We immediately said, you're a racist. And he said, I found myself saying, you know what? Then California, oh my gosh, I understand state rights. I looked at him and the room was nodding their head. And this is why I'm saying we have an opportunity here, unlike we've ever seen before. If we bash, as they're having these epiphanies themselves in their own circles, if we bash their head into the ground, you're going to miss the opportunity. They're figuring things out. I mean, I talked about the Bill of Rights. Heads were nodding. You're not talking to progressive, you know, Hollywood, Silicon Valley liberals about the Bill of Rights and have them, especially the women's right to vote. I went right to where their hot buttons were, but I spoke their language and they understood.
I love the notion as well as the laboratories, the states as laboratories.
Yes.
And is that maybe not the best way forward?
Yes.
Where the ideas, the winning ideas will actually emerge from?
We were talking last night. Okay, Glenn, so how do you solve healthcare? And I said, if you think I'm going to solve healthcare, but you're wrong. But I know the government won't. But that's why we have 50 laboratories. If California wants to do universal healthcare, don't come begging to the rest of the states, but do it. If Romney Care would have worked in Massachusetts, the country would support it, but it doesn't work. So free the states up to do what they think is right. We have a real chance to soften hearts, one, and at least truly understand each other based on facts and what we really believe. Once we trust each other, we can make a difference. And I urge you to join me on this journey. It's going to be a tough one. And a lot of people on your own friends on your side are going to say, that's not, they're going to be just like Robert. That's not going to work. But when you actually practice it, you will see it work and it will blow you away. Sponsor this half hour is American Financing. Have you found your dream home? The house you've been looking for your whole life? Now all you have to do is get past the dreaded mortgage process, but it doesn't have to be dreaded. If you are ready to buy or refinance, you need consultants that are dedicated to helping you make the smart mortgage decisions that align with your unique financial goals. Now, listen, this is what this is. When you go into a bank, oh, I hope they give me the loan. They're not giving it to you. They're selling it to you. And they are trying to get the best deal for them because they get all kinds of incentives. American Financial or American Financing does not take all their people are salaried and they're not getting kickbacks from the bank. So their job is to find the best loan for you. American Financing, they're now doing reverse mortgages. Reverse mortgages can sometimes be a good way to increase monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while still retaining the ownership of your home. Call 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or go to AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
America, I have very good news for you. Tomorrow is Friday. Oh, yes.
The best Bill part of the O'Reilly. Show
right here. Yeah, Bill O'Reilly joins us. Tomorrow with a recap of the news, open phones, you can get your call in, and the things that we missed this week, all tomorrow, and then the weekend.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.